Yeah, so we just finished talking about a team who didn't do anything at the deadline, and I want to talk about a team who might as well have not done anything at the deadline, and that's my Toronto Maple Leafs.
You're now listening to the Boys in the Booth podcast with your hosts, Harper Cody, Chad Melbourne, and Casey Abrams.
That's a big one. That's a big one.
Yeah.
How's it going? Welcome to episode 203 of the Boys in the Booth podcast. Cody, Abrams, and Melbourne, the three of us are all together for this mid-March podcast, and we enter a new week, guys. Final stretch of the NHL season before the playoffs already. We're at the post-trade deadline point now, and guys, how we doing?
Doing great. Always happy to have more daylight. I don't think anyone's complaining about that right now. Love the trade deadline. I kind of have a quick shot to make at a loser of the trade deadline, in my opinion. That's TSN's trade center, because they've gone too far now. They've gone too far of the self-awareness of how bad trade deadline day has been. And now it's 90% them making jokes about how quiet it is on trade deadline. And it got old. I turned them off very quick. But yeah, doing great. How are you, Chad?
That's so funny, Case, because I actually feel like it's refreshing to see the TSN guys who, you know, compared to their counterparts at Sportsnet, like, you know, the Sportsnet guys are so buttoned up in everything they do. It's nice to see the TSN guys have a bit of fun, especially, I don't know if you saw the video of, you know, Bruce Boudreau going around and, like, you know, there's the video last year of him, like giving the speech and criticizing people, whatever. So they kind of redid that this year. But the funniest thing to me in that skit was Bruce approaching the group of people talking. It was like Duthie and a couple other people. I forget exactly who was there, but Duthie was talking about how he gave the belt to O-Dog in the last quiz, which if you watch the TSN feed, like it's a running gag. They don't give it to O-Dog, but he finally got it. And the funniest thing to me was in that skit, James Duthie was just like, so anyways, I give the belt to O-Dog, and he's just like, oh, look at me, I have the belt. And then, oh, hey, Bruce. It was just funny. Like, I thought it was really good acting by Duthie. So, like, that specific part really cracked me up. And I love the TSN guys for doing it.
I like the TSN guys, and they can go ahead and be goofy and joke about things. But, man, the whole broadcast was them taking shots at how, oh, we're not going to have a job here soon because trade deadline day is so quiet. It's like, yeah, we know.
Okay, it's fair. It does get a bit exhausting to hear the same joke over and over. I get that. I will admit I had the Sportsnet guys on for a little bit, and I'll admit this too. So, you know that I live pretty close to the Sportsnet studios. So, about 45 minutes after the deadline had actually passed and they had stopped like breaking trades on the air, I was like, okay, this is the perfect time for me to wander over to Starbucks, which is right next to the Sportsnet studio, and see if I run into anybody, because I've run into people there before, and just my luck, there's 1,000 bigwigs at Sportsnet that day who all needed coffee and who were all drinking it all day. Didn't see anybody, so I was a bit disappointed. Wanted to talk to somebody about how I hated the Leafs deadline, but no one was there to talk to. Anyways, we're going to get into that, but before we do, Harper, how you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm good, boys. Case, I totally get your point about, you know, the TSN guys and maybe going a little overboard with the jokes and everything, but honestly, I loved it. Like, I kind of went back and forth a little bit with the Sportsnet coverage and the TSN coverage, and I got to tell you, man, all that stuff with Boudreau, all the stuff with O-Dog, like, you know, they turned the whole how like a couple of years ago he got caught, like his mic was on and like asked for, you know, if there was ketchup on his Harvey's burger or whatever, and then they turned it into a whole big thing where like Duthie was like getting emotional like about it and like, you know, just a complete gag. And so it you know, it makes it fun and entertaining. But speaking of the TSN guys, I'll wrap it up quickly with this. I saw the best tweet after trade deadline. I forget who tweeted it out, but it was about Bob McKenzie. And it was basically like, Bob McKenzie is pretty much retired. He shows up for two events, the trade deadline and the World Juniors, comes into the deadline, breaks the biggest trade of the day that no one saw coming. Of course, that's a hurdle to the Golden Knights, and then gets to go home and wait there till next year.
And drink his Bobby margaritas, man.
That's right. Yeah. So I laughed pretty hard when I saw that. I thought that was great. But anyway, deadline was great. It's always entertaining. And we'll get into our winners and losers here.
One more thing I wanted to bring up to you guys, because we haven't talked about this, I don't think, is something that happened the other night when the Minnesota Wild were in overtime against the Predators. They pulled their goalie and scored. So that's crazy in and of itself. But I don't know about you guys, but I did not know that the rule was the way it is, where if you pull your goalie and get scored on it in 3-on-3 overtime, you don't even get the loser point. Did you guys know that? Because that shocked me. And what a bold strategy, and it paid off.
Yeah, I knew that. And then I read a comment that someone made that got a ton of likes, and I was like fully on board with it. He says, if you lose your loser point for pulling the goalie and being scored on, you should take away the other team's loser point if you pull the goalie and win. I'm like, yeah, all right. Like, that would happen often leading up to the playoffs, I think.
Yes, mm-hmm. And it would make the races in interdivisional races more important, because you would see stuff like this happening. And also, I think it would kind of favor the offensive teams, which I'm not against ever. So I think that would be great. And I was actually wondering to myself if that was the rule in the first place, and obviously found out that it wasn't. But I'm in agreement with you, Case. I think that would add a lot.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. Like, what a gamble by John Hines that paid off. And I'm surprised we don't see that more, with how 3-on-3 overtime is so much about puck possession and hanging on to the puck and regroups and all of that. I'm surprised we don't see that more. So that was cool.
And there's a few players that, like, as soon as they get the puck in overtime, you got to feel comfortable in pulling the net, and Kaprizov is one of those.
Yeah.
He's sure with the puck. Like, you let him get it and then go, okay, throw another guy out there, let's score. And it took them seconds. They got another guy out there. The three guys on the ice had no clue what to do about that. And they just whipped over a quick one timer to my guy, Matthew Boldy.
And dude, how about Boldy fully admitting that he didn't know that was the rule either? I think that is hilarious. He's just like, I'm just trying to score, man. Like, I didn't know that was the rule. Like, I didn't know the stakes. Like, just playing my game, you know?
I didn't know it was a rule either. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. So there you go, man. I thought that was a really cool thing. And I know we hadn't talked about it, so I wanted to bring it up. But I think we should be ready to get into it.
Yep. All right, let's get into it now. Post-trade deadline, of course, which was back on Friday, March the 8th. Always entertaining time of year. And we're going to get into our post-deadline winners and losers. And obviously, it's tough to judge right out of the gate who are the winners and the losers. You need time to see how these deals are all going to play out. But just, you know, right off the hop, post deadline, you know, less than a week apart from it, we're going to identify some winners and losers, one each for this one, and try to get through it as quickly as we can for you. So thanks for listening. All right, Case, we'll go to you first, and we'll start with the winners. And who do you have in that category?
Muted, Case.
Sorry, I've got allergies right now, and I'm sneezing and snotting it everywhere. So I was ripping on mute there for a sec. I like that we're starting positive. I had two that I was kind of torn between, two of the top teams that made some pretty significant moves to make themselves better for the playoffs. And I decided to go with Colorado as my winners. Just the more I looked at it, I really liked what they did. It was directly fulfilling their needs, not just kind of like, you know, adding some extra stock to the cupboards to move on. But to kind of sum up what they did, their ads are Yakov Trenin, Sward, Duhaime, Mittelstadt, Sean Walker, a 2026 fifth and a 2024 fourth. So adding a few picks to kind of recoup what they paid. And their losses are Byram, Ryan Johansson, a 2025 first, 2026 third, and 2025 third. Just quickly to talk about some of the like lesser moves here, Yakov Trenin and Duhaime are excellent excellent depth pieces for the fourth line. Both of them play with an engine. Both of them are physical. Trenin chips in goals, more specifically over Duhaime. But I remember him a few years ago in Nashville's last playoff appearances in 2022 and 2021. He stood out to me because he was just a wrecking ball out there. And it was kind of, it was him and Tanner Jeannot really that stood out. Trenin had 3 goals in 4 games after they got absolutely swept, but he was one of the only pieces really working for them. Duhaime's going to be another kind of grinder for them that I think just works out, and it's what you need in the playoffs. But on to the bigger deals here. I'm going to package these two deals together because I think as a whole, these were it's one big trade. They happened a half an hour apart because one piece moving allowed for the other. Well, the two trades are Bowen Byram for Casey Mittelstadt and Sean Walker in a fifth, and they traded Ryan Johansson in a first. This works perfectly for me. I think that at first when I saw that Byram was moving for Mittelstadt, I thought, well, now they've got a hole on defense. I didn't love their bottom pair because of this. You have Girard moving up to play with Josh Manson on the second pairing, and you know, I wasn't totally in love with it, but then to see that they were able to get a defense to fill that gap, and a pretty good one too, who's been real good for Philadelphia as late. He's not a, you know, all world breaker, and he's not gonna get a ton of points for you, but he moves the puck well, he moves his feet well, and he plays defense well. And Mittelstadt, the price to get a middle six forward in the last 5+ years has been astronomical. And this guy's at a 0.75 points per game. That's unbelievable. Just a quick 3 guys that I looked up their trades because they just came to the front of my mind. Andrew Copp last year to the Rangers, 0.625 points per game. A first, a second, a fifth, and Barron. The second was a first if the Rangers won the second round. Barkley Gaudreau, 0.38 points per game, a first round pick. Jean-Gabriel Pageau, a first, a second, and a third. And he was 0.66 points per game. So maybe the best direct comparison here. So kind of just goes to show that you're expected to be giving up a first, a second, et cetera, for a kind of second line center. And that's exactly what they got in Mittelstadt. So I really love these moves for them. Their biggest weakness was their center position. And this just shows like they remember what bringing Kadri in for them in 2022 did, and they're doing it again.
Yeah, for sure. A lot there, Case. And obviously we talked quite a bit about this when it originally happened. We kind of agreed that we think Casey Mittelstadt is kind of underrated around the league. And, you know, Bowen Byram hasn't had extended looks in the top four, but he's going to get that in Buffalo. And they're both great players. And it's a pretty good trade that fills both teams' immediate and, depending on if they get to re-sign Mittelstadt, potentially long-term needs as well. So I thought that trade was perfect for Colorado. Obviously, bringing in Walker fills that hole right away and is just, it's an incredible get. And underratedly, they also get out of Johansson's contract at the same time. So like some savvy general management moves here, like just A tier. And, you know, if you want to call them the winners of the deadline, sure, they're definitely one of them. I really considered taking Colorado as my winner. But yeah, man, like they've just done everything that you need to do at the deadline in terms of making a big splash, making your team deeper, filling the needs that you actually have, rather than just tinkering around the edges like so many teams do every year. So I was very happy with Colorado's deadline. If I'm a fan of that team, like you should be ecstatic if you are. So yeah, Case, I think that's a great pick.
Yeah, it is a great pick. Absolutely. And they got beefier. Like there's no question about it. The ads of Trenin and Duhaime. I'm surprised that Nashville parted ways with Trenin because of where they currently are. And they've got a good shot to make the playoffs. And they've been, you know, arguably the hottest team here in the NHL for the last little bit. But apparently there were some issues with contract and term and all of that as they were trying to negotiate. And Duhaime is just your prototypical bottom six forward. And certainly that's a great trade with Buffalo and Colorado. And Mittelstadt is going to be a great player there. He has certainly turned into a great player, and can remember not too long ago when he was being called a bust after being an eighth overall pick in 2017, and he's turned into a fine player, and he fits that second line center role for them. So yeah, that's a great pick.
Yeah, and I gotta say, Harper, reading your three trade deadline targets for the Sabres on thehockeywriters.com, you pointed out that like a perfect target for them would be Philip Broberg, kind of a young 2019 draft pick defenseman who can fit into their top four and has a lot of upside and can be given a bigger opportunity. Well, it wasn't Philip Broberg, but, you know, kind of a good comparison in Byram. Obviously, Byram, the much better player now, and also has the upside. But I just figured, like, I have to get a shout out that was a pretty spot on target, you know, the type of player, if, you know, not necessarily the name in the end, but.
Yeah.
Well, and also pretty tidy work from Buffalo's side too in this trade, because if you just look at the makeup of their young players, they have so many good young forwards who can kind of do what Mittelstadt does for them. And Mittelstadt needs a contract, and Buffalo has to make decisions on who they want to commit to long term up front.
Yep.
And I don't know if Mittelstadt was necessarily in that conversation if they wanted to pay him. So you get a good defenseman on the back end to play in your top four right away, but to also complement your other really good young defensemen who are already there. So I like the deal from both sides. And it's kind of funny that, you know, we all love this deal from Buffalo's side, even though we're saying that Colorado is, you know, like one of the winners of the deadline. It's just like, it's a good hockey trade. Like, how many times have we heard that recently? I feel like these trades don't happen that often anymore. So it's cool to see.
Yeah, exactly. And like Elliot Friedman wrote in his 32 Thoughts blog before the deadline that, you know, a deal like that would likely come in the summer from Kevin Adams. And then a couple of days before the deadline, the bomb drops and we get the Byram for Mittelstadt deal. So it works for both teams. And for Buffalo, and I won't ramble on too much about them because we want to get on here with the rest of our episode. But like, you've got a replacement right there internally in Peyton Krebs for a guy like Mittelstadt. And so, and when everyone's healthy, the thing is, Mittelstadt, if you're going to put him at center and everyone's healthy, you've got two guys in front of him in Thompson and Cousins, who you've got locked up long term. So the Sabres, it wouldn't have made any sense for them to pay $7 million plus a year on a long-term deal for essentially who would be your third line center if everyone's healthy.
Yeah. Well, he would have to move to the wing, but I see the point. They've got 1,000 guys who do a similar thing. Exactly. So.
No, great hockey trade. Like, I couldn't believe it.
And Byram has fit right in with Buffalo so far.
Yeah.
Playing over 25 minutes a night, a goal and an assist in his first two games. Like,
yeah.
Playing 25 minutes, Case, and actually doing something out there. Unlike Owen Power.
Yeah, unlike Power. Yeah, that's been, you've been griping about that for 2 years now. And and appreciate the Broberg shout out too. I didn't even think of that, Case, to be honest with you. Like, I just put it out there and then, but I didn't even think, same draft and everything. Like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So, and just like the same makeup of a player, just one, they got the better one.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right, moving on from Colorado. Case, did you say you had another team that you were going to mention or no?
Yeah, my shout out is the Winnipeg Jets. They would have been an absolute lock in if the trade that happened in February was at the deadline. It would be guaranteed if Monahan went at the deadline. Like, they're the winners. But I really like their pickups. Tyler Toffoli is going to be a great top six player for them. Their forward core looks deep now. Like, you have Nino Niederreiter playing on the third line. I think they're going to love that. Another 30, he's probably going to be close to 40 goal scorer in Toffoli. coming in, and then adding Colin Miller as well. And both, I think that the Devils should have got more for Toffoli. So the Jets came away pretty happy there. And Colin Miller is a decent, you know, he'll be their sixth defenseman, hardest shooter in the league, apparently. And I didn't mind him in New Jersey. So I think those were both good pickups and kind of just shoring up their lineup in Toffoli in a big way.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. I thought about the Jets too. I thought they had a great deadline.
Absolutely. Chad, your winner, sir.
Yes. Well, I'm going to go with a team who just does things totally differently, guys. And we all know who I'm going to be talking about. We can't let them keep getting away with this. The Vegas Golden Knights. And by the way, if you're listening to this, head over to our Instagram page and check out our most recent reels. Some of them. One has 17,000 plays at this point. And it was the Jesse Pinkman meme of saying, you can't keep getting away with this. And it's Vegas, like acquiring Noah Hanifin. And that was before they even got Thomas Hertl. Like it's crazy. But just to go through their ins and outs here, they got 6'5" forward Anthony Mantha, 6'3" defenseman Noah Hanifin, and 6'3" forward Thomas Hertl. So they got a great middle six forward, who, by the way, has 20 goals already this year. They got a top six center in Hertl for the next 6 years at 17% retained, which is great. Like, I just can't believe that they got retention on a deal that has six more years left. And they got a legit top four defenseman. And they really, like, all things considered, they really didn't pay that much for the stability that they now have going forward. They traded David Edstrom, who, by the way, Harp, we had a bit of confusion about this last episode, center from the SHL. We called him a defenseman at first and corrected it. 2025 first, a 2026 first, a 2024 second, a conditional 2024 third that upgrades to a 2025 second if Vegas wins around this year. So probably call it a second. They have to get into the playoffs first, but call it a second. And a 2026 fourth. So really, like, you give up a prospect who you picked 32nd overall or whatever last year, who's not going to help you for a long time. A couple first round picks that, let's be real, aren't going to help you for a long time. And a few other picks that probably will never help you because they're not even in the first round. And what you get in return is three impactful roster players who do more than just one thing. They are all physical. They can all produce offense. It's just, this team doesn't do things simply. They don't do things the same way as other teams, and we can't keep letting them get away with it. Boys, what do you think about Vegas and their deadline?
Man, the fact that they were able to get a team to retain 17% of a six more year contract is beyond me.
And bonkers.
Not paying an arm and a leg for it. That trade was a first, which is going to be, you know, if they make the playoffs, it's probably going to be pick like 30. And if they don't win the cup again, and David Edstrom, who was a first round pick late last year or 2 years ago.
Last year.
Okay, yeah, I had that right. Like, that's all they gave up. And then they got 2/3 back, as well as Tomáš Hertl, who no one knew was available.
Yeah.
Like, you're talking about all the big fish. I don't think TSN had them on their trade bait list. Obviously, no. San Jose is looking to sell, but they have this guy locked up at a good price for a long time. No one thought he was going anywhere. And out of nowhere, Vegas picks him up. And this is after Mantha and Hanifin. We were already like, damn, like, I can't believe Vegas is getting away with this again. And they brought in her.
Like, that's ridiculous.
Crazy to me. Yeah, I also think that they are a winner of the trade deadline. I just knew someone else would take them. Like, this is ridiculous.
The cap shenanigans that have to go on to make sure that this team can play is ridiculous. And the cap shenanigans that are going to have to go on in the off season to, you know, the big decisions that are going to have to be made about whether or not you re-sign some players or who you keep or, like, what pieces you move around. Like, it's just, it's insane. No other team in the league operates like this. And it's so fun. I love it.
It is.
Today's cap hit, $98.6 million.
God. And the big thing to mention about that cap hit is a lot of those guys on LTIR will actually be playing for the team in the playoffs, as opposed to teams like Toronto and Tampa, who have more LTIR space being used, but those players won't ever play again. In Toronto's case, it's, you know, Klingberg and Matt Murray and, you know, guys like that. So it's, and Jake Muzzin, it's just different. It's different money. And that's why it's so crazy for Vegas.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Vegas, baby. Like, what else is there to say? Like, they, no one has been this aggressive. Like, we've never seen this before, and it is a lot of fun, you know. And look, we can choose to come on here and do this podcast and complain about how, you know, it's unfair and Vegas is doing all these things and using LTIR and guys aren't really hurt, blah blah blah. We can get into all the conspiracy theories, but you know. The reality is, like, a couple of things. The NHL does look into this and does investigate this. I truly believe that. And you know, and the thing is, like, there's the argument there that in the playoffs, like, the salary cap should exist, but there are like the risk for injuries is so much greater. And so you run into that problem too with injuries, with a salary cap, and having to worry about being cap compliant in the playoffs would just be a nightmare. And then the third thing is as well, think about our three teams, guys. If we were in that position, like, I don't know about you two, but I would want my team to do the same thing.
No kidding.
To make it better, and you know, and make them a Stanley Cup contender by any means necessary. Like, that's what it's all about. And you know, I heard Kelly McCrimmon the other day on Jeff Merrick's radio show, and he kind of said, like, you know, we're different in terms of, like, we're aggressive by trading our draft picks, and like a lot of the players that we've gotten, we've acquired them. And then he compared them to the Tampa Bay Lightning, who became very aggressive in a different way. You look at how they won their cups. It's all guys that they drafted, and then they became aggressive later on. So there's a bit of a difference there, but it's so much fun. And when I saw when they were, you know, getting ready to, like, when Gord Miller and the rest of the panel on TSN were teeing up that deal, well, Vegas is doing it again. You're not going to believe this, blah, blah, blah. I thought for sure it was Pavel Buchnevich going to the Golden Knights. But it ends up being Hurdle, 6 more years at just over 8.1, and the deal, the retention, all of it, I couldn't see it at all. And
well, yeah, they get him for 6.75 for the next 6 years. I mean, he'll be 36 at the end of it, but man, I think that's a bet you're willing to take, that for the next, you know, 4 to 5 years, you get prime Hurdle still.
For sure.
So
if he can, you know, and he's been banged up, and hopefully he can get back this season and contribute. But the other thing, it's like, what are the Sharks doing? Like, with the retention on Hurdle for that amount of term. And let's not forget either, like, they retained $1.5 million on the remaining term of Erik Karlsson's contract too. Like, that, those are big commitments in terms of retention, a lot of term there. I don't know, guys.
I think if there's any team that can do it, it's the San Jose Sharks, because they expect themselves to be bad for 4 or 5 more years here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
And, like, and I have it. I have the number here too. Like, for the next 2 seasons, it's 5.6 in total retention, but then after that, it drops to 2.8. So, like,
okay,
you know, and it's not crazy. And then, like, you know, 2027, 28, when they're expected to be at a level of competing for the playoffs, it goes down to 1.3, and by then, that'll be league minimum. So,
okay, fair enough. You know. Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
It is curious, though, because no other team in the league wants to retain for that long. But like Kay said, I think San Jose is just entering their full teardown, and they're not going to be competitive for a while. So I get it.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, boys, I'll get to my winner now from the deadline, and that's the Calgary Flames. I mean, you look at what Craig Conroy has had to do in his first year as general manager of this team and what he's been able to accomplish with the trades and getting the pending UFAs out the door and getting assets back. And learning from that whole experience that they went through with losing Johnny Gaudreau for nothing to the Columbus Blue Jackets is really something to applaud. And I give Craig Conroy all the credit in the world. Like, I'm not going to run through all the pieces and everything. I mean, you can go to TSN.ca and see the trade tracker there and look at the pieces that the Flames got, but it's a lot of prospects. It's a lot of picks, some players that can help them out right now. Kuzmenko has been a great fit, and that deal looks like a grand slam home run for Calgary with Vancouver, the Lindholm deal in particular, because Lindholm has really had a tough season, and the whole change of scenery for him in Vancouver really hasn't worked out so far, other than the first couple of games where he scored a couple of goals and that's it. But like, it's just crazy, guys. Like, going back to June in the offseason, Craig Conroy has had to trade Tyler Toffoli, Nikita Zadorov, Elias Lindholm, Chris Tanev, and Noah Hanifin. Like, those are big name players, big impact name players. And for him to get back the pieces that he has and move this thing forward and not let any of these guys go for nothing, I think is just something to applaud him for. And so good on Craig Conroy and the Calgary Flames. They can finally start retooling this thing. The last few games have been rough for them, but I mean, they've been hanging around in the race. I don't think they get in now, but, you know, coming into the offseason and the draft and everything, big times ahead for the Calgary Flames as they finally commit to a retool slash rebuild here. And good on them. Good on Craig Conroy.
And it's not just the pieces that they get back. It's the fact that they were put in a tough situation with all of those trades. Like, all of those guys expressed that they wanted to leave. All of them are on expiring deals, and you're put in a bad position. Usually when a team wins a trade, either they're getting the big piece that's coming, the big fish, or they're trading when they have leverage. There was no leverage here. He had to get rid of these guys, and he didn't lose any of these trades. You know, there's an argument to be said if he's won, you know, any of them, like I think he has personally, but you know, you'll go back and forth with people on every single one of these trades. But the fact that he hasn't lost any of them and he's gotten a lot of pieces back and he's picked a direction for this team, I think that it's a big win.
Bingo. Picking a direction is huge, Case. I'm glad you said that. That's what I was going to say. It's been a team in the middle for so long who is supposed to be better, and then they're just not. So then they hang on to all their assets and nothing happened. So picking a direction is huge. Selling off those guys who didn't want to be there, that's huge. I will say, when you look at the trades in a vacuum and you don't consider any of the context in terms of leverage, you know, I look at the Zadorov deal and I think, well, you know, they probably could have got more for him. And I look at the Tanev deal and I think, well, they probably could have got more for him. But then when you consider all the factors going into it, the fact that if they didn't do these deals, the players would just be out the door for absolutely nothing. You know, good on Conroy and management for getting at least something back. And like you said, Case, I don't think it's clear that I don't think it's evident that he lost any of these deals by a landslide at all. Like, it's, you know, I look at it and I think, maybe he could have got more. But at the end of the day, he got something. And for the most part, it was quite a bit, too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, a lot of quantity here. Like, you know, there may only be quality in a few of these deals, but a lot of quantity, which gives them a lot of options. And now it's up to their amateur staff, especially with, you know, can they prove that they were right to get Brustevich and Yermo and Grushnikov and all these guys that they got in these deals, and also draft and develop really well. And again, I just hope that with this draft this summer that they're able to draft Teej Aginla, because how cool would that be?
That would be cool. And Harb, I'm glad you mentioned like the actual guys who they picked up, like the players. They also got, you know, former Devils prospect Hoychuk. So like that's just another guy who can contribute. And I think, you know, GMs are starting to realize that first round picks aren't as important as they used to be. So I think it's kind of good that Conroy has gone out and trusted some of his scouting staff to pick up players. Like Brustevich is the big one, I think, who, you know this kid, like, you know how he plays, and he's already a bit further along than a kid you might pick, you know, 15th overall in 2025 or something. So I think that's like that's not minor. So I do put some emphasis on getting actual young good players back in return. I think that was good of Conroy.
Yeah, definitely something to applaud for sure. All right, boys, that's our winners out of the way. Colorado, Vegas, and Carolina, Calgary. And we'll get to our three losers now. So Case, back to you, my friend. We interrupt this podcast to tell you about one of our favorite partners, Sign Up Expert. If you're a sports bettor, whether a brand new one, casual, or hardcore, listen very carefully because this ad is for you. Guys, line shopping for the best odds matters, and that's why any profitable sports bettor needs to be using multiple sportsbooks to maximize their winnings. Thankfully, there has never been a better time to get signed up, and we are here to connect you with the best promotions industry-wide. When you use our link at signupexpert.com/boysinthebooth, you can get access to all the top sportsbooks in your region, along with a review of each platform and their benefits. Most importantly, all of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and when you register through our link, again, signupexpert.com/boysinthebooth, you will automatically receive the top offer at each one, allowing you to start line shopping with an enhanced bankroll. Guys, once again, it's simple. When you use multiple sportsbooks, you ensure that you can always access the best available odds out there, which is key to being successful and taking home those winnings, baby. So if you want to take advantage of these incredible benefits and support our brand all at the same time, it's a win-win, please consider signing up for your next sportsbook through our link in the description down below. signupexpert.com/boysinthebooth. One more time, that's signupexpert.com/boysinthebooth. Hey guys, Harp here from the pod. We all want two things as sports fans when it comes to buying tickets: to not be ripped off by scalpers and to have an easy way to do it. That's where SeatGeek comes in. This pod is sponsored by the absolute best ticket app out there, SeatGeek. SeatGeek takes the confusion out of buying tickets, making it quick and easy to get the best deals on tickets to your favorite sporting events. It does this awesome thing where they score each ticket out of 10 based on its value, so you know whether you're getting a good deal or not. If the tickets are green, you'd better act quick and secure those things, but if the tickets are red, maybe wait a little bit before pulling the trigger and monitor the price in the SeatGeek app. SeatGeek just makes it way too easy. Anyways, here's the best part. SeatGeek has completely hooked us up. Boys in the Booth listeners get $20 off their first purchase on SeatGeek with the promo code BOYSINTHEBOOTH in all caps. Click the link in the description to download the app today. And remember to get your discounted tickets to your favorite sporting events using the code BOYSINTHEBOOTH in all caps. Get great seats for a fraction of the cost with SeatGeek. Now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Well, I'd make an argument that Carolina was a winner of the trade deadline.
Yes,
but, of course.
Yeah, let's get into the losers. I don't have much to say here because, well, this team lost the trade deadline in my mind. And, well, they lost because they didn't do anything. And that's the New York Islanders. This team is a team that over the last 5 years, they have this identity of all we need is a chance. Just get us in the playoffs, and who knows, we'll go to the Stanley Cup final maybe. We can make a big push. It's because of our system. It's because of our identity. Well, They're in a position right now where they are tied in points for the two wildcard spots with Tampa and Detroit. And they are 2 points back from a divisional spot from the Philadelphia Flyers, who were semi-sellers at the trade deadline. And we're all expecting a slip-off. So aren't the Islanders licking their lips to get into that divisional spot and make the playoffs and go on some sort of push because the way they play hockey? Well, no, they made absolutely no deals, zero deals at the trade deadline. They actually haven't made one in 2024. So this team is sitting back and doing nothing and just letting the hockey gods decide what happens to them. I don't know. Maybe they didn't make any trades because they have no cap, because they give out cap and term like candy. But to me, doing nothing makes them a loser. And Detroit, I'm looking at you too.
I'm looking at LA. That's another team who did absolutely nothing when everyone around them in that division is loading up like crazy. But on the Islanders, I just pulled up the post here because I had to remember I had to make sure I was remembering correctly. Lou Lamoriello has gone 4 consecutive trade deadlines without making a trade. Guys, 4 in a row? Really? 4 straight deadline days. No deals. Like, that's, what are you doing? You're in a playoff race. You're a couple points back, like Case said. The Flyers aren't in a good position. It makes absolutely no sense. So I agree with you, Case.
In this season, he has traded Durando for Tyce Thompson and a 7th round pick for Bertuzzo. That's the whole season.
Yeah. And last year, prior to the deadline, he got Engvall from the Leafs for a 3rd round pick, I think. So it's like, I don't know, man. What's the plan there? Is this team good enough? I mean, they might be good enough to get in, but if you get in and get walked in the first round, like, what's the point?
I mean, in fairness, Bo Horvat last year too, but that was
true
in January. But
yeah,
I hear you. It's like doing nothing at the deadline when you're a team that, like, there's so much opportunity. You can say that Detroit is, you know, they're in a spot and they're looking at the Atlantic, which is going to be harder for entry, but 74-point Philadelphia Flyers, who sold at the deadline, sold Sean Walker and made a couple other small moves to improve themselves, but realistically, in the end, net out, sold at the deadline.
Yeah,
that's who they're trying to catch. To not only not get a wild card spot and avoid a Florida Panthers or a Boston Bruins, it's just crazy to me.
Yeah, you get into a wild card spot, you're playing Florida, who loaded up, or maybe Boston, who added some depth, or the Rangers, or Carolina, who added the biggest fish at the deadline. Like, so, you know, like, you're playing teams who are already better than you, who got even better on deadline day. Like, what's the plan? You know what I mean? So I'm in total agreement with you here, Case. Teams who did nothing, absolute losers. And I won't hear the argument where it's like, oh, you know, it's tough to get deals done in the NHL, because we hear that argument said all year long. And then all of a sudden, the week leading up to the deadline, there's like 1,000 deals made. So it's like, I get that it's tough to make deals. You want to wait as long as you can so that you have the most cap space. But if you did nothing at the deadline, even though it's hard to make deals, you're still a loser in my mind. So the Islanders fit into that. LA fits into that. Some other teams as well.
Yeah, no, totally agree with that. You know, like I said a while ago, boys, with Lamoriello and the Islanders, it's like Oprah, you know, it's like, except cars, it's 7-year deals.
Yeah.
You get one. Like, it's just, I don't get
it. For bottom 6 players.
But I mean, they are going pretty well right now. That's the one caveat to all this. Like, they may end up getting in, and they are going pretty well right now. So,
yeah,
they have Sorokin.
I get they're doing well, but it's like, letting fate decide. Why not make the move? Like, for do sure. something. Because who knows? They get into the playoffs, and this team is just, their system works in the playoffs, and they have a goalie who can steal it. So,
yeah. And the thing is, it's like, yes, this team is built I mean, like, depending how you want to look at it, this team is quote unquote built for the playoffs, right? Like, this team traditionally defends well, is good in low scoring games, has a great goalie, whatever. This year, we've looked at the numbers. We've already talked about this. Like, the system isn't working as well. They give up a ton of chances against, don't generate that much for, and it's uncharacteristic of what this team really is, but then they're just getting bailed out by their goaltender. So it's like, all of a sudden, for the first time in a while, there's a glaring need on this team, and it's players who are more committed to team defense, not giving up chances against, you know, and they didn't do anything to address that. So I don't know, man. Like, obviously, adding at the deadline isn't going to guarantee that you win anything. We've seen that for years with so many teams who add so much and then get burned for it. But you at least think that you give yourself a better opportunity to advance, a higher percentage to do some damage. But they didn't even do that. So
I understand these guys are professionals and they really shouldn't be thinking this way. But are you not sitting in that dressing room going, hello?
Yeah. Come on.
Do you not think we can do this?
Seriously.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Chad, your loser from the deadline.
Yeah, so we just finished talking about a team who didn't do anything at the deadline. And I want to talk about a team who might as well have not done anything at the deadline. And that's my Toronto Maple Leafs. Coming in, they added Ilya Labushkin, who is, you know, a bottom pairing caliber defenseman. They added Joel Edmondson, who is, you know, a bottom pairing caliber defenseman. They added Connor Dewar, who is a fourth line center, who I guess kills penalties. And they added Cade Weber, who is a 6'7" defensive prospect playing in the NCAA. And out the door, they paid more than a lot of the teams around them who got better pieces. They traded 2/3, a fourth, a fifth, and a sixth. I think they're the losers of this trade deadline because they're wasting a year of this core. They had glaring holes, aka a top four puck moving defenseman and a middle six defensively minded forward, or at least two way forward, that they didn't address. And like I've already mentioned, other top teams around them, like Tampa, like Florida, loaded up for essentially the same price or even less and got better pieces in return. So that's my quick spiel about the Leafs. They didn't do anything of note, and I just think it's an absolute mistake and a disaster of a trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like they're buying into the narrative that most fans are saying with Toronto right now is next year is their window, their target for a cup. So the team didn't go, you know, gung-ho at the trade deadline, even though they made a lot of deals. It just, none of them were particularly good. And it's especially frustrating when, you know, you hear these connections with Calgary and all the players Calgary is selling, and Tanev would be perfect, yep, in Toronto, either one of them or both of them. And they got neither of them. It's like, it was just classic NHL media hyping up what the Leafs will do and then it not happening. And it was, yeah, kind of underwhelming.
To me, it's most frustrating to hear that players who are in their system, like Fraser Minton or Easton Cowan, or, you know, they didn't come out and say this, but like Nick Robertson wasn't really involved in any trade talks, or like even Timothy Liljegren, like good young players. Like, it's frustrating to me that none of these players were even considered to be involved in trades. And it's like, take a note out of Vegas's playbook here. You can trade good players. Just get good players back in return. You know, like, you can trade your top prospect. Trust me, like, I don't want to trade, you know, Fraser Minton, who made the team out of camp this year as a 19-year-old. I don't want to trade Easton Cowan, who's gone 32 straight games in the OHL with a point, setting a London Knights record, by the way. Like, I don't want to trade those guys. But
yeah,
if in exchange you get a Noah Hanifin, you know, or an Elias Lindholm, or a Thomas Hertl, go outside the box, you know, like, all of a sudden you start putting real impact players who can make a difference now into the conversation, then all of a sudden it's like, well, you know, Cowan and Minton, those guys aren't realistically going to help you for another 2-3 years and be impact players. They might make the team, but are they going to be impact players in the next 2-3 years? I don't know. So to me, the hesitancy was frustrating.
There's got to be, he's got to be sitting at home right now, like, I could have got Hurdle for Easton Cowan and a first round pick.
Yeah.
Retained.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden you have Tavares and Hurdle splitting second line center duties. You know, you're playing them as your middle six centers. Tavares doesn't have to play 20 minutes a night out of his league anymore. And Hurdle, same thing. And then you've solved a problem, not only for this year, but for the next six. Like, it just, to me, there was just no outside the box thinking. And I hate to do this because so many Leaf fans disagree with me, and you know, I hear all about it, but I hate to be the revisionist guy and do revisionist history, but I think they would be a better team if Kyle Dubas were still here. They I just mean, would.
You say that, but how did Pittsburgh do at the trade deadline this year?
And I mean, fair.
The kicker.
Fair, but how was Pittsburgh built after the offseason? A hell of a lot better than the Leafs. You can say their record doesn't indicate that, but we all loved their offseason. We love the moves they made, and we hated Toronto's, and, you know, kind of wearing that right now. We'll see. I just like this. I've said this before. I'll say it again. This is my least favorite version of this group. All of that being said, though, I'm still going to bet on them to win, because if I don't and they do, I look like the worst fan on the planet.
Yeah, we all hated this deadline, so they'll win the cup this year.
Exactly. Exactly. That'd be the leafiest thing ever, right? Yeah. So yeah. I don't know. That I just had to get that off because I've gotten so much grief from other Leaf fans who kind of like the change because it's different, right? And like, I respect that opinion, but I don't know. I want to have a conversation on the podcast with John over the next couple of weeks and really break this down. Him and I have been going back and forth. Like, we have some opposing opinions on what the Leafs did. So I would like to do that. Maybe in the next few weeks we will.
Well, there's a couple of things to this with the Leafs deadline. I understand your frustration, but one, there is something to the whole point of, like, you know, making adds on the margins, so to speak. You know, like you add Edmondson, you add Lyubushkin. Dewar, who I thought looked good against Montreal. I watched that game on Saturday. I thought, you know, he competed hard on that fourth line and didn't realize how many minutes he played with Ryan Reeves in Minnesota. So maybe that was part of it, because we know that Tree Living likes Reeves quite a bit. But I don't know, like there is something to that, like just making, you know, these small little deals, like adding on the margins, that, as we've seen before, can pay off in the postseason. You know, what if Connor Dewar scores a big goal that wins you a playoff game in overtime? Like, you know, just saying that as an example.
Dude, he might not even be in the lineup, is my point.
Well, I know. And I understand that.
Like, he's a fourth line player. And like, now Lyubushkin, by the way, the back end is the bigger problem for me. Now Lyubushkin is stapled to Morgan Rielly. You know, they've played together before. I was okay that they brought Lyubushkin in for not that much of a price tag, but now you're playing him with your best defenseman? Like, we've seen it work for a bit in the past, but man, look at their top six on the back end and compare it to any other contender in the East. It's not even close.
No, it's not.
It's not even close. And you have the best goal scorer on planet Earth, and you're wasting yet another year. It's just frustrating, man. They had the assets. I hate that argument. People saying that they didn't have the assets. You have them. You just didn't want to trade them. You've got to give to get, and they didn't want to give, so obviously they didn't get.
I mean, I get your frustration. I do. I get where you're coming from. At the same time, though, I don't mind the whole, like, looking ahead sort of thing. Like, and what do we know about Tree Living, right, guys? Like, historically, he does not make big trades at trade deadline. He makes big moves in the summertime. So obviously, but I get it. Like, Matthews is having an all world season, and they've had a pretty good year. It's kind of a wait and see until the summer, when I think that's when most of the surgery is going to come from the general manager to this team.
I get it. And I don't want to be too hard on the guy, because he did just come in. It was a quick turnaround. He had to learn everybody in the organization, familiarize himself with all the prospects, and go through that whole thing. And it happened rather quickly. So it's tough to blame him. But that being said, like, all of the other management is still around, you know, like,
yeah,
it's.
And like, and again, just one last thing on the Leafs, like, you know, this summer, there's going to be a lot more flexibility. A lot of guys are coming off the books, you know, those guys that are on the 1 year deals, Bertuzzi, Domi. And I mean, both of those guys are starting to go now, and we'll see what happens with them. But, you know, like, there's going to be more flexibility there. And I just feel like, you know, it's going to be a, it has potential to be a big off season for the Maple Leafs, which historically, Tree Living, again, makes big moves in the offseason. He doesn't do much at the deadline. Like, last year, he made one trade with the Calgary Flames. He traded the swap of the Ritchie brothers with Arizona and Connor Mackey for Troy Stetcher. That was his move. I think the deadline before that, he acquired Cali Yarncroak from Seattle for a couple of picks. Like, he doesn't make big moves at trade deadline.
So I had a train of thought here while you guys were talking, and that's that, well, sometimes you make the big moves and it doesn't work out either. And that was, my brain instantly went to Tarasenko and Kane, which was last year, which then made me think about how I was wrong earlier in the episode when I said Kopp was last year.
That's so 2 years ago?
That was 2 years ago. Yeah.
Oh,
I just
yes.
misremembered that. Yeah. And right. But like, the conditions of the trade didn't change. And
right.
because of that, I think it was 2 firsts and a fifth for Cobb.
Yeah. Well, and but gotcha. Then, like, to your point, where, you know, teams can go all in and then lose those players for nothing. Of course, that happens. But then the alternative is pay the price and get players with term, like a team like Tampa has done, or pay the price and convince players to sign again, like a team like Tampa has done. So it's like, these deals aren't impossible to make. You just have to be willing to give up some pieces, and they very clearly weren't. So I don't know. Another point is, next year, we've talked about this on the podcast as well, next year will be the toughest year cap wise for the Maple Leafs. So how much can really change this offseason? You know, they'll still have Tavares making 11, Marner 10.9, and then both Matthews and Nylander's new deals kick in. So this will be the highest percentage of the cap this upcoming year that the big four will make. So, like, again, like, it just, everything comes back to, why not make a push this year? How important is Fraser Minton to your success within your 3-year window? Like, it's just baffling to me.
Well, we can sit here and talk circles around the Maple Leafs, that, you know, all the things we've been saying for a long time for them.
So, I know.
Let's move on to Harper's loser.
Yes. Yeah. I will do an episode with John on this so that I can talk at length and I don't annoy you guys for talking about the Maple Leafs for too long, because yes, you're right. It has gone on too long, but I just needed to share my thoughts.
Well, good. And we look forward to that episode with John. All right, let's get to my loser, and we wrap up here afterwards. The Pittsburgh Penguins, guys, are a loser for me at trade deadline. They, of course, make the big deal selling off Jake Guentzel to the Carolina Hurricanes. And I look at the return, you know, obviously they get Bunting. I mean, that's a good middle six player now that Dubas obviously knows from his days in Toronto. But I look at the prospects, and Carolina's got some really good prospects, guys. And, you know, like, Chad, you identified Jack Drury as a young player. He was not included in this deal. Morrow wasn't included. Nikushin wasn't included in this deal. Gunler wasn't included in this deal. Like, go down the list of all these good high-end prospects that weren't included in this deal. Now, the one that jumps out to me, if any, is that Russian, Ponomarev, He has played some NHL games this year, and he does look like a very good young player, but I just don't know. I'm not encouraged that much by this deal. And like Ty Smith going in this deal to Carolina as well, I don't think that's insignificant, because look at what Carolina did for a player like Jalen Chatfield as an example. Like, that guy was nothing in Vancouver. He goes to Carolina and has been a solid bottom pair defenseman for them who really fits. And Ty Smith is talented and, you know, was an all rookie a few years back. And I just wonder if Carolina can turn him around as well. So I don't know. I don't like the deal for Pittsburgh. I mean, we'll see how it turns out. And then, like, where were their other moves? Like, you know, who knows? Like, maybe they tried to move on from Riley Smith, but that's a missed opportunity. They could have gotten something for him. What about Nedeljkovic? He's had a pretty good season. You know, capitalize on that. And also, you know, a guy like Marcus Pettersson as well. Now, again, don't know how much interest there was in those guys and everything. Elliot Friedman made a good point on the 32 Thoughts pod that came out on Monday, saying how he thinks like they would have tried to actually keep Gensel if they didn't discover that the value just wasn't there for a lot of their other players, like a Brian Rust, for example, who has quite a bit of term left. But at the end of the day, it's been a disaster for the Pittsburgh Penguins. They've obviously checked out. I feel really bad for Sid, and I think they're a loser from the deadline.
Yeah, I think that when you have probably the best available player in the league and a 40 goal scoring winger in his prime, who's won a cup, who's been productive in the playoffs, I think it's got to be like, we got to be wowed by that trade. And although they got a lot of pieces and some good pieces, I just don't know if I was wowed there. So overall, that was disappointing. Plus, I think that this one just hurts. No one wanted to give up on the Penguins, and it's a sad trade deadline for the Toronto Maple or for the Pittsburgh Penguins. But the point I wanted to make, and that's why Toronto's on my mind, is we have talked about the last three Toronto Maple Leafs GMs as the three losers of the trade deadline.
It's true.
Oh,
that is true. There you go. Lou Lamoriello, Kyle Dubas, and Brad Treliving.
Yeah. That is an excellent observation.
I mean, yeah, only one of them is guided by the invisible hand of Brendan Shanahan, though. The other is, I guess, you know, he does it all himself in Lou Lamoriello. And
he's a loser.
And the third is guided by the invisible hand of whoever owns the Penguins, saying you're not allowed to trade anybody. Because I think that's really what happened. I think if you asked Kyle or any new GM coming in there what they wanted to do to turn this team around for real, they would say, you know, as much as it hurts, we got to move off from Sid. We got to move off from Malkin, Jari, whatever. Tear it down. We gave it one last shot. Didn't work. Let's strip it down to the bare bones and do it again. But
the only way I'm ever trading Sidney Crosby is if he comes into my room and says, I want to be traded.
Yeah. I mean, obviously that wasn't going to happen, but I think if you really want to turn this team around properly, that's what you're eventually going to have to do. And
fair enough.
Yeah,
maybe that happens going forward. I know there was a lot of chatter about that on trade deadline day. A lot of people were talking about the possibility of Crosby being moved in the future or if he resigns. But yeah, I do agree that, you know, when you look at the Gensel deal, you think to yourself, they probably could have got more. The only thing I'll say about that is, I guess let me start with Bunting. Why are you trading for a 28-year-old? You know, like, I know that he had a late start and he's still young in the league and he's like a 60-point player. But why are you trading for a 28-year-old when your team's supposedly retooling? I just don't know if that helps you.
Because he saw Kunitz on the ice and then he rubbed his eyes and it was Bunting and he was like, maybe I'll just put him with
Obviously, there's the connection there between Dubas and Bunting, but I don't know. I think there were some better younger players available. Obviously, Harp, we talked about this. Marty Natchez would have been the one that you target. And even if it's like,
yeah,
you know, Natchez and a pick, that might be better than the quantity approach.
Well, exactly, right? And Carolina may ultimately move on from Natchez anyway in the offseason. So we could be looking at Natchez being dealt to another team at the draft if they decide to re-sign Guentzel and, say, Brett Pesce, who I think is up after this year. They're not going to have room for everybody. So, and, you know, they've got Kuznetsov in the mix now. And by the way, like Jeff Merrick mentioned this today, how weird is it to think that Guentzel and Kuznetsov, the former Penguin and Capital, are playing on the same line together tonight?
In the Metro Division still.
In the Metro Division.
No, that's pretty cool. I will say, though, it is. I will say, when it comes to the return that they got, though, you know, the prospects, Ponomarev and Lucius, like, immediately, those are two of Pittsburgh's best prospects. And, you know, like it or hate it, like, Carolina has a ton of great prospects and they've been, you know, accruing them over time. So these were two of their, like, good but not great prospects. We mentioned, like, Nikishin would have been a better one, maybe Morrow, a couple defensemen. But, you know, all of a sudden, like, Braden Jaeger is probably their best prospect, but then after that,
oh, he definitely is. Yeah, I mean, they have Owen Pickering too, but there's no guarantee that any of these guys are going to pop. But if you're a Pens fan, you got to be hoping that a few of them do. And again, I just feel really bad for Sid because
great season.
This is the first, unbelievable season, and this is the first time in his entire NHL career that his team is deciding to punt it, you know. And like, I have no problem with the bunting part of this deal. I really don't, because you look at the deal that Calgary made with Vancouver for Lindholm, and they got Kuzmenko, who's a 27-year-old winger, and I mean, that's worked out great. And maybe bunting will end up being a great fit in Pittsburgh, and so that's got to be a part of it. Then you sort it out, you add the futures in afterwards. But I don't know, just all in all, I just don't think they got enough, but we'll see. Ponomarev is the one prospect that's intriguing for me.
I mean, for me, Kuzmenko was a 30 goal scorer, and I have been on record multiple times saying that bunting was, you know, the product of circumstance in Arizona. And but I don't want to beat that dead horse or dig up that skeleton.
Rookie of the year Michael Bunting should have been.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, clearly isn't having the best year this year in Carolina, but there's a lot of other guys there, right? And he's not necessarily a goal scorer, but talk about fit. Like, Guentzel to Carolina, that was my mock trade. I thought it fit perfectly.
Yeah,
this is going to be good great for this team.
And Carolina, what did they do? We talked about it. What Elliot Friedman was saying, they bent their principles a little bit here, and they went out and got a guy who, sure, they could very well re-sign, but there's the possibility they won't. And so this kind of says that, you know what, we're trying something different here, and we're going for it.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Is that it? We done?
Yeah, I think so. All right, fellas, there we go. Episode 203, winners and losers from the NHL trade deadline. Thanks so much for listening. Enjoy the hockey this week. A lot of good games on, and we will chat with you again next week.
This has been another episode of Boys in the Booth with Harper Cody, Chad Melbourne, and Casey Abrams. Connect with the Boys in the Booth on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at Boys in the Booth. Visit boysinthebooth.com for show details. And don't forget, you can become a patron of the podcast for just $1 a month at patreon.com/boysinthebooth.